Broadcasting on the Drug Truth Network, this is Cultural Baggage.
It's not only inhumane, it is really fundamentally un-American.
My name is Dean Becker. I don't condone or encourage the use of any drugs, legal or illegal. I report the unvarnished truth about the pharmaceutical, banking, prison, and judicial nightmare that feeds on eternal drug war. Welcome to this edition of Cultural Baggage. I'm really proud to bring back to the show an old friend, a man who fights for our rights, Mr. Kevin Zeese.
Thanks a lot for having me on, Dean.
Kevin, you're considering a run for the U.S. Senate. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I live in Maryland, and we have an open seat in the U.S. Senate with Senator Sarbanes retiring. And the other two parties, the major two parties, are running pro-war, anti-paper trail, pro-corporate candidates. And I just can't stomach that. And so I've been in the midst of an exploratory phase that I'm coming to the end of and have decided next Monday I'll formally file for the U.S. Senate. It'll be a campaign that brings together multiple third parties, the Green Party, the Libertarian Party, and the Populist parties behind one candidate. I'm also reaching out to, of course, Democrats and Republicans and independent voters. And so my exploratory committee includes people from all those different parties and affiliations. So I'm feeling pretty good about being an anti-war candidate, a drug policy reform candidate, and my major focus will be peace, justice, and democracy, and that's what I'll be campaigning on. People can find out about it on my exploratory site, which is kevinzeese.com.
Well, Kevin, so much of government these days seems to be trust and obey. Your thoughts, sir? The Iraq War seems to be a pit of pain and misery. Your thoughts, sir, sir?
Well, I learned to distrust the government early on in my work on the against the war on drugs. I mean, I saw very quickly that the facts were on the side of the drug policy reformers, that the statements made by the drug czar were exaggerated, sometimes outright false, and that the strategies being used were not effective. And as I worked on other issues, I've seen the same thing. In the Iraq War, there's no question we went to war based on false information. There were never any weapons of mass destruction. Anyone who looked at the situation at the time knew there were no weapons of mass destruction. I mean, recall the time. We had air flights over all of Iraq except for Baghdad. We had UN inspectors going in looking for weapons of mass destruction, even in Saddam's palaces. And there's an international organization that looks at nuclear weapons, said there were no nuclear weapons there. And yet our president was saying a mushroom cloud over the United States was possible from Saddam. It was just outright false, and I can't believe the Democrats bought into those obvious lies. And then they, you know, made claims that Saddam was a danger to us and the surrounding countries. But if you looked at his army, it was dilapidated. His economy was destroyed by the economic sanctions that we put in place. And he was surrounded by very strong countries around him, Turkey, Iran, Saudi Arabia, Israel. If Saddam had made one wrong move, any one of those countries could have obliterated him. And so he was never a threat to us, neighboring countries, and never was pursuing weapons of mass destruction. Yet we had this drumbeat to war that led us into this quagmire. And now we're stuck there with a real mess. And how do you get out in a responsible way that leaves Iraq no worse off than it is now? And how do we get our troops home safely? I mean, I don't think any more soldiers or even civilians in Iraq should be dying for this illegal war and occupation. So we need to get out of there quick. And I think you can't trust this government. The information it gives us has to be questioned, and we can't trust them to be prepared. I think Louisiana and the reaction to the hurricane once again showed the inept nature of our government. And this is not just President Bush's fault. You can go back to the 1990s when President Clinton was in power, and the same kinds of reports about Louisiana, New Orleans being a bowl that could drown in a hurricane were out there, and budgets were being cut and recommendations were being ignored. President Bush continued it, made it worse by sending money to the Homeland Security Department that should have gone to New Orleans levees, by sending a National Guard to Iraq that made it all worse. But really, both parties are to blame for this, and the government really has shown we can't trust them to do the most basic meet the most basic needs of our citizens.
Speaking of New Orleans, I personally see kind of a parallel, if you will, to the way that the people there were treated, mostly blacks, that were just ignored. Their plight was put on hold for days on end. They were just cast aside, so to speak, for other government priorities, I guess.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a reality. I mean, it's not just, the issue is not just blacks, because obviously some blacks were able to get out. African Americans who had cars and had resources were able to leave town. The real issue is poor. And I think what it really shows is, you know, a city like New Orleans had about 35% of its population living in poverty, and, you know, not able to afford a car or gas to get out of town. And then the government knew from its own plans and past when they had prepared for emergencies in New Orleans, they knew that a certain percentage of the population wouldn't be able to get out and they'd be there days on end without resources to survive. And they let that be the standard operating procedure for dealing with an evacuation of New Orleans. And so I think it was pulled off the, you know, lift up the rock and we saw what's underneath, which is the racism, the classism, that those who are poorest are going to be hurt the most. It also kind of highlights some other issues, though, that are interesting. I think the whole question of fossil fuel reliance. I mean, there was a local activist from my hometown here on Meet the Press this weekend, and he was talking about how New Orleans was really a symptom of a problem we're going to face in all of our major cities on the coast of the East, West, and Gulf. The global climate change reality is starting to hit, and this is most likely related to that. There's no question it's global climate change. There's still some scientific debate about whether it's caused by humans primarily, although I think the evidence is getting stronger on that as well, and whether these kinds of catastrophes are related to it, although, again, the evidence is getting stronger on that as well. So he says this is something we're going to face in San Diego, New York, you know, Miami, and this is going to happen throughout the country. So we better start to get this right and start to figure out how to break our addiction to oil. And that, of course, goes back to Iraq as well, because that's really what it's turned out Iraq is about. President Bush finally admitted that last week when all of his other excuses for the Iraq war had been shot down. He said we can't let the terrorists get control of the oil revenue. So now we know what it was really about. It was about oil all the time. And we need to break our addiction to fossil fuels. It's destroying the planet with the climate change problem. It's polluting our waters. And it's a finite resource that we're going to run out of. And if we're going to have standard of living raising around the world, we need to invest massively in technology development. And a lot of technology already exists. I think the first step, though, before investing is stop our corporate welfare toward the oil companies. Here we are, these are the richest companies in the world, profiting in tens of billions each year. And in this most recent oil bill, this most recent energy bill, $7 billion in corporate welfare for the oil companies. Why are we subsidizing the wealthiest companies in the world? And at the time, companies that we should really be trying to shrink rather than expand. The reason is because the oil, saturated nature of our government, you know, starting with President Bush and Dick Cheney, two oil executives surrounded by more oil executives in their cabinet. We need to break our addiction to oil and get the oil barons out of power.
Now, Kevin, the Congress just passed that massive, bill, was it $230 billion to various constituent groups around the country, including, I think it was 200 and something million dollars for a bridge that will support 50 people up in Alaska. Meantime, yeah. New Orleans was starving for support, and here's what we got.
Well, you know, it's a real shame the way our government has developed, and I think that we're reaching a point now where the people are ready for massive change. There was an interesting survey done that was reported in The Economist of U.S. voters. They asked the question, does your elected official represent your priorities in Congress? The answer, only 17% of the people said yes. 83% said no, elected officials don't represent my priority. So I think we're seeing a big disconnect between the people, the people's needs, and the government's actions. And it's becoming more and more obvious. That's one reason why I'm looking at this. I'm going to be running for the U.S. Senate, is because I think it's time for people to step forward. And you got to get involved in electoral politics. I've been involved for 30 years in advocacy for social justice and economic justice and democracy in our own country here. But what I found is you have to challenge the people in power. If you don't challenge the people in power, they're not going to listen to you. The facts can be on your side. The arguments can be on your side. The common sense can be on your side. But if you don't challenge the people in power, you're not going to get there. I mean, the drug war is a great example. Look at drug war facts. Go to drugwarfacts.org. You can see the facts are on our side. Go to Common Sense for Drug Policy at csdp.org. You can see the arguments on our side. And yet we continue to spend $50 billion a year as a nation on this failed drug war. That's just one example of many of how we are just misdirecting our priorities. And I think it's time for people to get electorally involved, whether it's going to be volunteering at campaigns, donating to campaigns, or running for office yourself. KevinZeese.com, send a contribution. It's going to take a lot of money to challenge these folks. I'm not taking any corporate money, no corporate contribution, so I'm going to need people to get involved in this campaign and make it happen.
Well, I want to thank you for joining us today. I want to close out with a thought that the mayor of New Orleans, Mr. Ray Nagin, he seemed to be right on the money. He cast a little blame, if you will, towards the state, but more primarily the FEMA folks. Was wrapping up this interview, I heard with a thought that much of the problems, the turmoil in New Orleans was caused, and again, he didn't know this, he was just projecting it, assuming it, that drug users were responsible for the mayhem.
I think that's absurd. I mean, you know, I'm sad to hear him say that kind of thing. I mean, I think he's right about the problems with the federal government's response. They were not prepared. They hadn't thought it through, and then to look for a scapegoat, drug users, is just a real sad state of affairs. I mean, people were left without food and water, and that's what most of the looting was about. There may have been some small looting of opportunity for other stuff, but primarily it was people just trying to survive, and it's a shame that the mayor would scapegoat like that. But I think it's even a bigger shame for people like Tom DeLay, your Houston representative there, and our president, George Bush, to try to put the blame on local and state officials, when it's quite obvious where the real problem was. We had a federal government that was inept, unprepared, and unwilling to do what was necessary to protect the lives of people in New Orleans. And that's a real embarrassment, a real shame, and I think creates the appropriate anger among the population. So stop scapegoating the drug users and stop facing up to your own responsibility, Mr. Mayor.
I do want to recommend to folks that they consider Mr. Zeese for the U.S. Senate seat. I know him to be a man of honor and courage. He led a crew of folks across Texas on the journey for justice, 100 degree heat, hassled nearly every step of the way by state and local police officials, and yet he got the job done, and he helped make a huge difference in the attitude towards the drug war here in this gulag state.
Well, thanks a lot, Dean, and I, you know, I remember that journey. I was when the Tulia, Texas issue first came to light. We got a New York Times article about Tulia that really started that whole effort to correct that. I was out in Texas, by the way, most recently visiting was at Camp Casey in Crawford, another brave person out there with 100-degree heat. So people need to get out there and face up to these political leaders and challenge them when they abuse their power.
I want to thank Kevin Zeese for participating on today's program. And remember, you can learn more about his Senate campaign at KevinZeese.com. That's Z-E-E-S-E.
Come on, I know you can get this one. The use of this drug has gone down considerably over the last two decades.
It's time to play Name That Drug by its side effects.
Cancers of the lung, trachea, bronchus, larynx, esophagus, pancreas, kidney, bladder, and cervix. Impotency, 25% of deaths from residential fires. Time's up. The answer, tobacco. Taxed, regulated, and in cahoots with the U.S. government.
After 9/11, the prisoners wrote our office, and I know that we're going to get similar mail as soon as they're over the shock of what's happened along the Gulf Coast. And after 9/11, when our country faced such a terrible disaster as what happened in New York, prisoners wrote to say, why won't they let us help the citizens of New York? We could go into that contaminated rubble and help clean it up. These men and women who've done nothing but caught up in a drug conspiracy, nonviolent people, first-time offenders, let them come and help us rebuild our city. And so what we're hearing of from legislators is the call for public works programs. And I know that prisoners are going to send us our letters and say, please, please, tell them we will go and help rebuild the Gulf Coast. We'll help clean up the rubble. I'm a historian in my past. I study odd subjects, and I happen to know quite a bit about the Civil Conservation Corps of the Depression era. But then one of the challenges of the men and women who were leading corps of people who were having to live in remote areas to build roads and things like that, live in tents with other people, live in harsh conditions, was the difficulty of getting them over the institutionalization of such living conditions. And prisoners are already conditioned to this lifestyle. And our leaders would do well to look to them for a public works force and let them earn their way out of their sentence early by serving the people of the Gulf. A lot of people are not aware that when the wildfires of last season swept through California and threatened hundreds and thousands of homes, it was a third of the firefighting force were prisoners. And a lot of people do not know that prisoners are trained in all the things that are needed in the Gulf Coast today. They know how to cook for large amounts of people. They've been taught skills like firefighting, even though when they're released, they can't fight fires as a job. They can do it in our federal institutions. Prisoners are trained in many, many things, including first aid. So we urge you, if you have a loved one who's a prisoner, to urge your legislators. Prisoners can write government officials and offer them their services. And if we get this message out that we do have a large amount of people willing, very, very willing to help in a volunteer sense, and that should be converted to let them go home to their families early. The prisoners in our country, all over this country, are doing things like managing public golf courses when they're near military bases. If they're safe enough to roam around golf courses, they are safe enough to put into these Gulf communities to work and serve our country in public works programs that will allow them to return to their families early and get the families of the Gulf Coast back into their homes early, too. Thank you, Drug Truth Network. This is Nora Callahan with the November Coalition. Please visit us on the World Wide Web at november.org.
The wars of eternity must be kept alive at any cost. The war of terror is the war on drugs with afterburners. Untrustworthy snitches lead to chemical weapons and eternal wars causing endless and needless hardship, disease, and death. The government attack on the evil ones, mostly people of color, purported to possess these weapons of mass destruction, which threaten our very society. Freedoms supposedly fought for are eroded, denied, and held in abeyance till that magical day when all druggies, terrorists, and evil ones are dead, and nobody will ever again use drugs or make a chemical compound not approved by the president. Then we will once again ring the bell of liberty for all.
Hello out there, cultural baggage fans. This is Loretta Nall reporting for the U.S. Marijuana Party from Alabama, and I've got a little bit of a personal story to share with you this week. On September 4th, 2005, after many weeks of planning and schedule arranging, I drove my mother and my oldest brother, a disabled airborne ranger and combat veteran, to see my other brother at Elmore Correctional Facility, which is just outside of Montgomery. I considered from the outset of this trip that there might be trouble because of my prison reform work, but thought, nah, surely not. Inside the guard shack, there were two female guards conducting the visitor searches. One of them informed us that shorts were not allowed, and of course, my brother was wearing shorts, knee-length khaki shorts, very respectable, if you know what I mean. This was upsetting, as it was very obvious they were not going to let him in, and we had already driven over 2 hours to get there. I asked if there was a Walmart or something similar nearby that would be open on Sunday morning, because many businesses in Alabama still operate under blue laws. One of the guards directed me to a Walmart, and after a 25-mile round trip and a pair of new overalls, we headed back to the prison. Inside the guard shack, we were told to leave our purses, any tobacco products, lighters, paper money, hats, and everything but our trunk key in the car. While I went back out to place all of these items in the trunk, my mother and brother were searched. When I re-entered the building, my brother was nowhere in sight, and my mother was sitting on the couch looking upset. One of the female guards asked me, "Are you with her?" Yes, she's my mother. Well, she can't go in and visit. Well, why not? The guard looked at me with such disdain as, and how dare you ask me a question, civilian, and said, because she isn't wearing panties. And as you can guess, I was completely flabbergasted and decided after a second that I must have misunderstood what she said. I'm sorry, what did you say? Because she isn't wearing panties. Well, the whole day was shot because I wasn't wearing panties either, although both of us were wearing pants. My mother wound up feeling humiliated and in tears because she was made to feel as if she were wrong. It is a disgrace and an outrage that an elderly woman should be violated in such a fashion when she has made the trip to visit her child in prison, which is difficult enough on its own. Once again, this proves that the Corrections Department does not care about keeping family bonds intact. You can read this article in full at the U.S. Marijuana Party blog, and that's at usmjparty.blogspot.com. This is Loretta Nall. Until next time, y'all be safe and stay out of jail.
There's a lot of flag burners who have got too much freedom. I want to make it legal for policemen to beat them, cause there's limits to our liberties. At least I hope and pray that there are, cause those liberal freaks go too far.
Poppygate. Bizarre news about the U.S. policy on controlling heroin. Featuring Glenn Greenway.
For years, thoughtful people had warned that the levees would not hold. Now, the devastation of the flood denies imagination. Those with nothing are further dispossessed, and vast numbers are dead or dying. As terrible as the flood in New Orleans, another flood continues to build in the highlands of U.S.-occupied Afghanistan, a flood of black market heroin that now feeds the habits of 9 of 10 addicts worldwide. The levee erected in 2000 by the Taliban was quickly disassembled by the U.S. occupation forces, turning a trickle into a torrent. Now, nearly 90% of the danger, disease, death, and decay related to black market heroin consumption originates directly in Washington. The U.S. military is in place in both disaster areas. In Afghanistan, 20,000 American troops turned 40,000 American blind eyes away from the vast poppy plantations that make the occupation possible, not by their choice, but by higher command. The victims of both floods are largely the already marginalized poor who are now being warehoused, some in churches, some in prisons, some left to die in the street. How cruel the act of nature that laid siege to America's Gulf Coast. How crueler still the act of man that willfully joins heroin manufacture to foreign policy to prohibition. This is Glenn Greenway reporting for the Drug Truth Network.
Enough! Enough! The multinational companies that make the goods, that write the paychecks, that own the media, that control the politicians have for too long run amok. We, the people of the United States of America, have for too long been hornswoggled, rode hard, and put up wet. The corporations who now own the government send our jobs overseas to make a better profit, to buy a bigger yacht. Democracy has been stolen from our nation, disguised as security. Ignorance is taught at every level. Trust and obey is our mantra, and meantime the water boils to a deadly froth. The future of America, of individual Americans such as yourself, is in your hot, boiled, red little hands. The corporations are counting on you being too distracted, disengaged, and too afraid to stop their takeover of all your rights. A quote from Thomas Jefferson: "The tree of liberty must be refreshed from time to time with the blood of patriots and tyrants," end quote. Will you jump from the boiling water? Will you dare to compare the U.S. Constitution to what these corporate whores in Congress now call governance? Or will you continue to squat and watch the bubbles rise?
Hartford City Government is putting on a drug policy reform conference entitled Hartford's Illegal Drug Burden, Where to Put Our Resources. It's going to happen October 21st and 22nd at Trinity College. 2005. The mayor of Hartford is going to kick off the conference with a few words. And what we have is drug policy reformers from all over the nation. This should be a very good conference in that This is the first time that Hartford City government and a major insurance company is sponsoring this particular type of conference. We're also bringing in a lot of prominent people, one being the a national board member, Richard Burton, who is head of the Prison Rights Project. We're going to have Roger Goodman. Eric Sterling is going to be there. And this is going to be quite a conference. You can go to our website, www.efficacy-online.org, to look at the outline of the conference. This is Cliff Thornton, reporting for the Drug Truth Network, Efficacy, in Glastonbury, Connecticut.
I'm really proud that Cliff Thornton of efficacy-online.org will be joining us on a regular basis, reporting for the Drug Truth Network. I'm sad to say that this week we are missing several reports. Mr. Philip Jackson with the Black Perspective on the Drug War, Phil Smith with the Corrupt Cop Story, Doug McVeigh with the Drug War Facts, Winston Francis and the Official Government Truth, and Steve Nolan with Drug War History. It's my hope that we'll have all of them back for you next week on the Drug Truth Network. This next little sound bite, put together by the Rolling Stones, goes out to our good friend, Mr. George W. Bush.
For more than 172 years, one organization has been responsible for educating more U.S. presidential candidates than any other. Skull and Bones, purveyors of fine opium products since 1832.
Neocons are milking the good and decent members of the Republican Party with promises they'll never keep and lies they'll never have to pay for. Next week, the guest on Cultural Baggage will be yours truly. I'll be bringing you a speech I'm giving to the American Constitution Society. No new stations to report this week, but I do urge you to visit our website, drugtruth.net. There you can hear this week's interview with Judge James P. Gray, the author of Why the Drug War Has Failed and What We Can Do About It, a Judicial Indictment of the War on Drugs. He was our guest this week on the Century of Lies program. For those of you who thought I might have been a bit too harsh on Mr. Bush, here's a little response from him.
If this were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier. Just so long as I'm the dictator.
I'm George W. Bush.
Regular listeners know that I can't keep up with the drug war with an hour and 21 minutes a week, but you can if you visit mapinc.org, M-A-P-I-N-C.org. There's more than 150,000 articles available about the drug war from around the world. There's links on how you can write better letters to the editors and op-eds, and ways that you can become a more knowledgeable, better educated drug reformer. And as always, I remind you, because of drug prohibition, you don't know what's in that bag, so please be careful. To the Drug Truth Network listeners around the world, on behalf of engineer Philip Guffey, this is Dean Becker for Cultural Baggage and the Unvarnished Truth. The show produced at the Pacifica Studios of KPFT, Houston.
Jap dancing on the edge of an abyss. Ha ha.